Welcome to A Course in Miracles. Well, tonight we get a fun task tonight. We get to work on, I don't know, I guess it's a habit by now, but really, another one of the ego, one of the ego's tools in the world that it thinks is so, so wise, and yet really the penalty you pay from using judgment, it goes unnoticed, and it's extreme. Judgment is one of those two-edged swords where it seems like when you judge, you're protecting yourself or you're wise, you're taking care of business somehow. But of course, in the ego's hands, judgment divides. It's a tool of separation. And there will be something good and something bad because of it. And the bad, of course, is what the ego grabs a hold of. And the good is only because something has been made bad. So it's both relying on bad in the hands of the ego. Remember, the ego knows, this is a quote from the Course, the ego knows only what it does not want. That it knows for sure. So this judgment maneuver that we use with our minds so easily, it's part of the script here. It's part of the script here so we can reinforce separation. So that's our task tonight, is to reveal how judgment works in the mind and catch it so that we can go on after tonight. We can go forward in our lives with judgment weaker, if not eliminated. We have to catch it in its subtle ways. We have to see the price we're paying for letting judgment be a common tool that we use, thinking that it is helpful or useful for our happiness. Now, of course, the judgment we're talking about is not practical judgment on whether the USB should be plugged in this way or that way first. We're not talking about whether you should go on a weight loss program based on how you judge your body to be. This is not what we're talking about. We're not talking about practical judgment, discernment, choices, preferences, chocolate versus vanilla ice cream. This is not the judgment we're talking about. The judgment we're talking about is one that counts on the inside. We're talking about whether you judge something to be bad or evil or wrong, so wrong that it's a sin, so wrong that it's doing harm to your happiness. This is the kind of judgment that actually matters, that you look at. The practical judgments that are merely of the material world, they simply don't matter. Why? Because you start them and you leave them in the material world. They don't matter. But when it has something, when you judge something as able to affect your happiness, because it's either in the world, holy, right? Or most often, the one we have to focus on is evil, unholy. When you judge something is actually harmful, evil, trying to hurt you. This is what we have to peel back, this clever, clever use of the ego's sorting out. Okay, let's welcome to Course in Miracles again. So this, what we're looking at tonight is this critical tool called judgment. And the ego will use it to its benefit. Supposedly, it's the way to survive. Sundari?
There's one thing about what you said that I got stuck on. That was, it seemed to me that if you pick a flavor ice cream and don't like it,
yeah,
that then you're in the same category. Or if you look at your body type.
Thanks for saying that, because I want to clarify that That's why I said that you will find good and bad things, like the wrong flavor ice cream, or you don't like pistachio, or what's that, garlic-flavored ice cream. You really don't like it, but it does not make it evil. And it stays at the level of the world. When you make a judgment like that, maybe you don't like loud motorcycles. Harley Davidson's going by at 2 a.m. You don't like them. You don't like them. As long as it's the motorcycle that's being judged for being too loud and it disturbs your sleep and it wakes you and the cat up every time, that stays in the level of the world. Get it? But when you move it to the person riding it as evil, that changes to the level of mind. And now a judgment is applying to evil. So what are you trying to say?
I don't believe that. You know, like in David Hoffmeister's Communities.
Yes.
I mean, I've talked to him a long time about preferences, and he just lumps it all together. That yeah. It's like active. And for me, judgment and time, at least at the moment, from my present perspective, are 100% identical. And so I'm either on a timeline where the flavor's no good, but in the future I could get a better flavor, and I remember in the past how good.
See how hard that is. See how hard that is. That's very difficult.
For me, here's the template of all of creation. If I circle anything and say it's wrong, that's as big a sin as you're wrong. Or Donald Trump is wrong, or Hitler's wrong.
Yeah.
It's.
Just for tonight, try this out. Try this out that your ego, and this is a quote from the book, your ego is always wrong. So your life is going to be full, your life in an ego and time is going to be full of wrong. The book says so. You've lived it your whole life. And you just gave us a few examples right there. So what if Course in Miracles was allowing you to disassociate yourself from your ego so that you were not your ego? Even though you had a body and you have a preference for a certain color flavor of ice cream, but because your identity is shifted, you no longer have to consider those choices as costing you anything or unholy. Why? Because they're in the dream where they belong. They're not you. They're level of the world, which is a dream of separation, and not your true spirit, and nothing to do with God or joy or divinity. If you try to mix the two levels, Sundari, and make them both holy, you will never finish. And I haven't listened to David talk through that discussion, but from what you described, it seems very, very hard to make everything holy or everything so non-confrontational. Of course, it can be done because there's no limit to your mind. But what I'm asking you to do tonight is, or maybe he's doing a more advanced teaching as well, of course, where your mind is, you know, like a monk, and everything is completely compassionate and calm with no arguments about anything. That's probably where he is. Tonight, I'm focusing on tonight's paragraph, acknowledging that people are not there. They're not reaching for a purified existence, walking the world as a saint. This is not what the Course is requiring of you, at least not on the page we're studying tonight. Maybe David Hoffmeister, he's teaching another level where you should be sanctified, basically. Everything you see and do should have no argument. That's fine. Not what we're doing tonight. And the reason why this is important, and it's only important to you, by the way, if you still have times when you get upset during your day. This is the only reason why I would ask anybody to do this exercise. If you don't get upset during your day, maybe you won't find as much use of tonight's teaching. That could be the case. I'm guessing everybody here still has a little upset sneaking in here, sneaking in there. A little judgment still occurs. They shouldn't have said that. They cost me peace. I think that's probably happening for everybody. So until it's completely cleaned out in the way I'm describing, which is for your mind, for your being, not for your body and the world, the material level. This does not need correcting. Here's why. What good is saving the world if you lose your soul? You can't make a correction in the world that you can keep. Why? Because the world's not real. It's a dream. It's not created. So anything, there's nothing you need to do here in the world. You need to do here in the world to be at peace or to become enlightened or awakened. The world can be very useful, and we're going to do exactly that, and that's what the book is teaching us, to use the world to catch our ego and to free our minds. This judgment thing, though, I want to call to your attention that the Course teaches there are two levels and there are two voices. One is material, one is spiritual. Judgment tends to take something of the material world and try to make it spiritual. This is the kind of judgment that we must catch. Judgment tries to take something of the world and have it affect your what you actually are, you. Taking away your peace, giving you something to worry about. This is a judgment we must wake up to. Not the every little physical judgment thing that's the wrong color to paint a car. Nobody should be driving a car that color. Okay, you got to pick it, you got to move it up a level from that. And we'll look at a few passages to help orient our, in case I didn't say it well enough. Before we study the paragraph, I'll lead you to a couple places that describe the level of thinking the Course wants you to do.
One level up.
Maybe. One level up.
One level up might be, that is a ridiculous color, and whoever chose it to buy that car is an idiot. Now, in that case, it might be what you're talking about. Is that true?
You could call him an idiot as long as it has no cost to you. In other words, when you see that car, and if you judge it to be painful to you, you never want to see that color because it makes you unhappy and it costs you your happiness.
Okay.
There are idiots. There are murderers in this world. There are successful people in this world. There are cold-hearted people in this world. There are loving people in this world. Right? They all exist. Tall people, short people. Oh, it's too tall. Oh, too short. Oh, too mean. Oh, too much of an idiot. You see, it's all a level of the world. The dream has all these different colors that make it up. It's not a sin. It's not a problem.
Okay, so I have people in my life who say, I hate Trump. Okay?
Yes.
And I'm thinking, how does that make them feel to hate somebody? And they say, makes me feel good to hate him.
Yes.
So, in that case, I can't believe it. And so that makes me upset. Is that the problem?
Yes.
Not about them hating or not hating, or they might like hating. I don't know.
Well, they're in their path. Their path is hating. Your path was hating. Maybe it isn't anymore, but it was.
Okay.
If you were ever a teenager, you probably were trying to be taught how to hate the right things, and you were learning from your friends what to hate and what to like so you could be more liked yourself. That's okay. Does it affect your happiness? This is the key. Does it help you, according with the Holy Spirit in tow, that very observation would help you discover your own ability to choose peace? How you feel about Trump and whether that makes you hate or not. Are you able to separate the world from your identity? Now we're having spiritual discussion. Or are you letting the world decide whether you're unhappy? And if Trump makes you unhappy, you are referencing the world for your happiness. Is that fair? This is the whole point. Everybody turn to page 68. Sounds like we had a lot of work to do here. We would like to do a little meditation on this, but we kind of just kind of ran through so much of that. Turn to page 68 in the front of the book. Let's just dive in and start working this. Sounds like maybe we got some juice here to work through. This is an early instruction in chapter 4. It's a very short sentence. It's kind of your teacher, being Jesus, hope for you as a student. Actually, knowledge. He knows everybody will take the same step because it's one mind. Paragraph 6. Sentence 2. It's in black and white. He says, here's what you're doing. If you wonder what should you do today, throw out your Course in Miracles and just do this. You'll be fine. You will wake up all on your own. It says, your mission is very simple, period. You are asked to live so as to demonstrate that you are, key word there, are. How many people have done that I am trope? Setting the whole I am teaching and trying to get centered on being, and God says I am that I am, and you try to get into that zone, right? Well, are, A-R-E, is a derivative of am. So tune in, all you who have spent hours doing that. You are asked to live as to demonstrate that you are not an ego. That's a complete teaching. That's a complete instruction. Now, if you have questions about what an ego is, then you might need more teaching. And this book will gladly show you in detail your own ego hour by hour. So it's helpful for that, because then you can more quickly discover what you've been hiding from. You've been very successful, actually. A lot of us were successful for many years not knowing what our ego actually was. Was that the ego that made you say that? Is it the ego habit that makes you drive the way you drive, or say the things you say, or take credit, or wish you could take credit? Or decide you could never be a Trumper or be a Bidener? Is your ego that makes you decide that? So you must understand that this world was designed to entertain you forever. It was designed very cleverly. With what power? With what power was this dream made, Michaeline? What power made this elaborate dream of bodies and time and space and jobs and children and politics and leaders and followers and money? What power, Michaeline, made this fantastic dream? You got to unmute yourself.
I just say, God, love.
You hear that squeaking now? Do you hear it squeaking?
Is it from me?
I hear that squeaking.
It came on when you came on.
But I don't know what it is, because I don't have a fan or anything. Maybe it's a feedback thing.
It could be a feedback thing. Yeah, internet, or you got another speaker in there. I don't know.
Yeah, because all I have on is my laptop, and my heater goes on once in a while, but it's not on right now. So I don't know where.
All right, we'll just have you mute yourself as much as you can.
I will.
What power, Ross, is behind this elaborate dream where some guy had enough money to put his sports car in orbit? What power did that?
I would say thought, because that's an inside job. Everything's in the mind. So it's all thought that has constructed this world, this universe.
It's all thought that constructed it. What powers thought? Jason, what powers, where did enough power come from to make the dream that you're living? What power is that?
Power of the mind.
The power of the mind, absolutely. Deborah, what is the power of the mind? I mean, after all, look at this elaborate dream we're living here. You ever see the flowers out there and the color coordination, and they grow and take in sun and water and then dirt and they make a flower? What? Where did that come from? Where does that power come from?
I think it's from the divine, and then we just twist it.
I would say that you got it. That's what I was looking for. I really couldn't say any better than that. There's only one power. There's only one power, period. Anywhere, anything, any level, there's one power. And the Course
choice. Says,
yes, you use choice. That's right. But you're still choosing with one power. One power. Ultimately, bottom line, there's only one power to do anything. If there were two powers, then there'd be God and something else. There'd be truth and something else. There's only one power. So, the Course says you're going to use this power no matter what, because you are alive. You are a being. And on page 68, we get a very specific instruction speaking to us where we find ourselves as identifying with bodies and time and space. It says, your mission is very simple. You're asked to live so as to demonstrate that you are not an ego. It's speaking for you that you believe you are an ego. This is describing your addiction. This is describing your challenge. This is describing the miracle that you need. Because you identify deeply with being an ego, trusting an ego, surviving because of what the ego judges to be good for you. Now, let's look at, this was a theme that we were using last week a little bit. Let's bridge a little bit here. Look at page, just a few pages away, 73 in the text, I think. Oh, it doesn't look right. Hang on a second, I remember this. There's a really high-level, sobering summary of what A Course in Miracles is going to do. Oh, it's 23. Text, page 23, way up front. Even earlier than 68. Oh, man. He's like, hey. He's like, listen up. Oh, I swear that was it. Hang on a second. Yeah, G23. Oh, but it's paragraph 3. Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. So look at text 23, paragraph 3. This is a time where Jesus he kind of waxes into bottom lining it a bit. He says, if you really just want to know what we're doing, like on page 68, he says, you know what, I'm just going to tell you. And then he sucks up and he says, let's get back into the classroom and do some more illustrations and spelling it out. But this paragraph 3 is that's a little sobering, maybe. Luann, would you read for us paragraph 3 on text page 23?
The title of that part is Healing as Release from Fear. Only the mind can create because spirit has already been created, and body is a learning device for the mind. Learning devices are not lessons in themselves. Their purpose is merely to facilitate learning. The worst or faulty use of a learning device can do is to fail to facilitate learning.
Would you read that sentence again? This is also packed, and we're not going to spend a lot of time here, so I'll just have her reread a few things to make sure we hear them. Paragraph 4, the worst. I mean, sentence 4, the worst. Yeah.
The worst a faulty use of a learning device, such as the body, can do is to fail to facilitate learning. It has no power in itself to introduce actual learning errors. The body, if properly understood, shares the invulnerability of the atonement to two-edged application.
Okay, now hold on there. So remember, your job is to live, is to demonstrate you are not a body. And we learned from A Course in Miracles that the body is the home of, wait for it, the ego. It's a place where the ego can call home and have a name and a face and money and value and history and everything. So when we use the word body, you can extend it to the world, to everything physical. It is the home of the ego. Do you see how deeply you're in this script? Please continue.
This is not because the body is a miracle, but because it is not inherently open to misinterpretation.
And then just for clarification, have you back up two whole sentences because I interrupted an important point. The body, if.
The body, if properly understood.
Yes.
Shares the invulnerability of the atonement to two-edged applications. This is not because the body is a miracle, but because it is not inherently open to misinterpretation. The body is merely part of your experience in the physical world.
Yes. And then just to make a finer point on that, we learned elsewhere in the course, the body is wholly neutral. It doesn't feel. It doesn't desire. It doesn't live. It doesn't die. The body is wholly neutral. Well, you could say that it lies in its level, it lives and dies, but it's not happy. The body is not happy, nor is the body unhappy. The body is wholly neutral, has no opinions.
So what I'm hearing you say now is the body does not epitomize life.
Yeah, it does not epitomize life.
Okay.
You could say that.
The body is merely part of your experience in the physical world. Its abilities can be, and frequently are, over-evaluated.
Yes.
Is that the same thing as overvalued?
Yeah.
Okay. However, it is almost impossible to deny its existence in this world. Those who do so are engaging in a particularly unworthy form of denial.
Please reread that sentence.
Those who deny the body's existence in this world are doing so engaging in a particularly unworthy form of denial.
Well done, Luann. Thank you. Why would that be an unhealthy, unworthy form of denial? to deny the body's existence in this world. Watch what she says next. Go ahead, Luann.
Let me read it. Oh, 12. The term unworthy here implies only that it is not necessary to protect the mind by denying the unmindful.
Oh, not necessary to protect the mind by denying the unmindful. Man, is this packed and loaded. Please continue.
If one denies this unfortunate aspect of the mind's power, one is also denying the power itself.
Jesus drops the mic and leaves the stage. He says, there, I said it. He said, we can't deny the power, the one power, I'm telling you, that is. One power that you wield as an extension of God. You cannot deny it. You cannot deny the existence of your dream if you're dreaming it. Do you see the problem with that? Pretty, I know, this is tricky stuff. But I want you to see the problem with denying something you think is real. It's very, very, that's why I say it's very, very difficult to try to reconcile everything in the world. Yes, Ross?
Unmute.
So also, the Course says, don't deny your brother's body, but see him as sinless. So it's the same, you know, following in that vein, it's the same kind of thing. Don't deny your body, don't deny your brother's body. See yourself and your brother both as sinless, and then you got it. You don't have to deny the body.
Yes.
I think it's even worse than that. If you deny the body, then you deny how you use the body. Because if it's gone, then you're saying, I'm not using it. But we're using it all the time. And trying to go by this book, we're using it.
You believe in it.
Pardon?
You believe in it. And so as long as you believe in it, the A Course in Miracles, the Holy Spirit, will use it to help you in your awakening. As long as you believe in it, you do not need to stop believing in the body. Not at this level. You could. There are certainly paths to spiritual awakening that would, with such absenteeism of mind, you could stop believing in bodies instantly. That's not what we're doing here. That's not this path. This path is a gentler. It's steep. It's radical. This is a path that takes what you believe and reinterprets it. And brings you in proper alignment. It's Miracle Principle 50. Everybody, you can drop this page and go to the front of the book, Miracle Principle 50. What is the Holy Spirit's job?
That's page 6, by the way.
Thank you. Page 6, right up front. Sundari, would you read for us Miracle Principle 50? 50.
Miracle compares what you have made with creation. Accepting what is in accord with it as true and rejecting what is out of accord as false.
Good little summary. That's Holy Spirit's job description.
I'm sitting here thinking that virtually every sentence we think is programming the body.
Nice! That's what I'm talking about! That is what I'm talking about, Sundari.
Sentence, because it's completely new.
Every sentence.
Vaccine.
Every thought.
Organic food is good.
That's what I'm talking about.
Jelly beans are bad for me.
You're programming the body.
And you draw forth the witnesses to whatever you believe.
But I want you to recognize that if you are studying to be a concert pianist, then you will make decisions in your life so you can learn how to play the piano better, better, better. In fact, you will make this programming the body, okay, on Sundari's phrase. You will continue to make decisions to maximize your ability to play the piano well. Is your piano in tune? Do you have a good piano tuner? Or did it actually, that guy's tone deaf? Never gets to G. The G flat, is G sharp or is it flat? Ah! So it becomes very, very important in your life. So every thought you have about the piano is programming. Keep it on the correct level. And if you're making money playing a piano, this is important to you, and you will be all excited about it, keep it on the level of the body. It's not a sin. It's practical, and it's not the focus of A Course in Miracles. It's not a judgment. Yes, watch yourself only if it makes you upset. If you lose your peace, now it's A Course in Miracles. If it helps you earn money, so what? If it helps you play the piano better, so what? If it brings you joy, really, so what? Joy's natural. You don't have to seek for joy. It's another fundamental, metaphysical teaching of A Course in Miracles. One of my favorite pages, page 338, paragraph 6.
You know, I'm so happy you just said that, because I find myself judging myself about every judgment I make.
Ha-ha! Thank you, Luann.
If I don't like ice cream of some sort, or if I don't like how I'm doing as a therapist or whatever.
If somebody else thinks you should like...
Yeah.
And you don't. That's right. This is careful, because the ego says in order for you to be loving, you must understand and agree with everybody. On one level, that's easy, because it's true. Everybody in their where David Hoffmeister is he's trying to get you to drop the differences and go to the sameness, which is what we're learning with A Course in Miracles. This is our challenge, is to get ourselves out of ego separate identification and to give up seeing differences and only seeing sameness. But that is not done with the body's eyes or with the body's checkbook or with the body's time. The sameness is done with vision. It's the only place it can be done. We did a whole section on vision. It confuses levels trying to reconcile the shifting, changing world with eternity. You will forever be struggling, and you'll come back again and again and again and again to try to get it right. So important what we're studying to understand where we are reaching with this learning. It's amazing that all of this is in this book. It's just, I feel so fortunate. This is a great section. But we studied it over 10 years ago. Yeah, Sundari?
Well, I'm just sitting here, and it just has to be all the same for me. I mean, I still can't get off in that if I don't allow all, I'm left with the ow, A-L-L-O-W. It's like, ow, without accepting all, without yeah. And the other thing is, there's that place in the course, and I don't know where it is here, which says that no matter if, you know, somebody stabs your friend or you get the wrong flavor ice cream, every level of irritation goes to murder. And I spent a year looking at that in myself. Really looking, and finally decided, it's true. It really did go to murder no matter what it was.
The phrase you're looking at is a short sentence, and it says, if it is not love, comma, it's murder. Of course. You want to see that? Should we go there?
Sure, but that's the only place that it says that?
No, it says it three times, three or four times. Yeah, it's, it uses that word murder a few times in the same context you're saying. The one I like says that if your thought, you're talking about your thinking, and if your thoughts are not of love, they are of murder. Just to be extreme, you know, he's making a point. He's making a point that when you take the terms of divinity of your spiritual being, true love always joins and shares. It does not divide or condemn. So anything that's not true love must divide, condemn, not join. Well, that's shorthand for kill it, murder, don't include it. Must not be good enough for love. If that exists, welcome to the world. Yes, Indari.
Well, the other interesting thing is, if you call the ego out on that, mm-hmm. The Celestine prophecy says, if you call the ego out on that, it can't help but run away. And I tried it once with this roommate on pilgrimage who was furious at me. Anytime I came in after 11, she decided that was uncomfortable. And finally, I said to her, listen, no matter what you say to me, what you do, I'm going to come in when I want to come in. But next to my bed here, there's this lamp. And I give you full permission to take this lamp and bash my head in and kill me when I come in. And it's okay. You have my permission. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden we became friends and the issue dropped.
Yeah, you broke the cycle. Sober. That sobered that up pretty quick. Oh, for goodness. All right, so we got a lot of work to do tonight, actually. Let's turn to tonight's reading on page 443 in the text, 443. And let's dig in on paragraph 7. And Michaeline, when you get there, would you read for us paragraph 7?
Paragraph 7?
Yes.
443. Judgment is but a toy, a whim, the senseless means to play the idle game of death in your imagination. But vision sets all things right, bringing them gently within the kindly sway of heaven's laws. What if you recognize this world is a hallucination? What if you really understood you made it up? What if you realized that those who seem to walk about in it, to sin and die, attack and murder and destroy themselves, are wholly unreal? Could you have faith in what you see if you accepted this? And would you see it?
Thank you. He's calling us out on the fundamentals of valuing a dream or living in a dream, taking it seriously, and the costs of that. Judgment is but a toy. Huh. What a perspective. A whim. The senseless means to play. Look how lightly Jesus sees judgment and how much of a tool he thinks you need it. The idol, another key word there, idol. Of course, he uses it a few times. Game of death. Wow, since when is death an idol game?
When is so, Andrew, yeah. Andrew, is this like the shadow figure?
Yes.
That's what we see when we see those that seem to walk about in sin and death. That's like our shadow figures. Is that the same thing?
Yes. Figures that we give reality to that can take our peace. We may forget their names even. We may forget exactly what they said, but we will never forget how they made us feel.
Right.
Shadow figures. You just know they're bad. You just know you're afraid of them. You just know that they can harm you. Ego loves them. Yeah.
And that's really stark because it's one of those, like, unconscious, like when I'm not diligent in my thoughts, it's one of those unconscious things that happens.
Yes.
In my perception.
Yes. You got it. You got it, Michaeline.
And then I have no peace.
You are pointing out what it means to live as an ego. These habitual thoughts come back and take your peace. They come back and take up the space in your mind. This is what the Course eventually calls in, wow, lesson 199, I think. Idle thoughts.
Idle thoughts, yeah.
You know, for Michaeline, let's go there. Okay. It's got to be close.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let me see if I'm right.
199.
Pretty sure it's 199. No, it's the review. The review after 200. So review 6. So turn to page 386.
Okay. Oh yeah, I remember this.
Remember this?
This is
you know, some of our most important mind training. And it talks about relinquishment, last sentence in paragraphs 3. You know, the job here is we're doing the last training in part 1 of the workbook is to arrive at the fact I'm not a body.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm free. Why? Because I'm still as God created me. This is something you're to carry with you throughout the rest of your lessons. That the miracle is I'm not a body. Yes! The forgiveness is remembering I am free. Why are you free? Because I'm not a body. I just learned it a minute ago. I'm not a body. Sometimes you don't feel free, but if you remember you're not a body, that has to elevate your identity to not being a body. Maybe you have to meditate to get there, and you probably already have, and you know what I'm talking about. This mm-hmm. is a reminder to go there where you say, I'm free. It's a big deal.
And it takes me above the battleground of everything.
Yes, takes you above the battleground. And then finally, the holy instant. I am, there's your I am. I am as God created me.
Right.
That's a promotion from being an ego. My phone keeps beeping. Hang on. So, paragraph 3, sentence 8. You're bringing this special thought into your mind with huge intention. You've studied 200 lessons to get here, to give you confidence that you got a good teacher, that this is worth actually spending some time meditating, some time taking time out of your day, your busy day, to do mind correction with this Course in Miracles as this is happening. With trust. It's a pretty big deal. He says, repetition of the special thought we practice for the day, no form of exercise is urged except a deep relinquishment of everything that clutters up the mind and makes it deaf to reason. Okay, what else? Sanity. And what else to get rid of? And then also that blocks a simple truth. Take a look at... you can drop this page. We're not coming back. Go back to the front of the book to page 29. He starts out early, early on. And he says, you know what? I think I found something you got to work on. You humans. I know how you operate, Jesus says. He says, you know what? As long as you choose me as your teacher, I got to make a personal comment on your life. on your use of mind. Paragraph 4. I mean, the first sentence is fighting words, but it's not why we came to this page. Paragraph 4, sentence 1, the correction of fear is your responsibility. Has to be. Because you're the one who's dreaming it. You're the one who's so busy judging things as fearful, as worthy of being fearful, that can take away your happiness. You're using the one power to do that, and nobody is ever going to take that away from you. You would not no longer be a child of God if that power was taken away. And you are a child of God. You will never lose this freedom. You may dream of fear forever if that floats your boat. Just look at, hang on, Sundari. Just look at sentence 6. This is why we came here for sentence 6. Jesus is talking to you, about your habits. He says, you're much too tolerant of mind wandering. And when you do, when you keep going to these idle thoughts and worrying about shadow figures that have been gone for years, when you keep doing that, you know what you're doing? You are passively condoning your mind's miscreations. Remember I told you there's one power? It's a creative power. It's a creative power. That's the only power there could be. You've used it to, quote, create something not real, and we have a word for that. It's a dream. They do it all the time in Hollywood. They make stuff that isn't real, and they try to make it as real as possible. And I pay. I pay them. When it's really good, I pay them, and then I recommend to my friends to go pay them too, because it was great. It's so real. Loved it. You're not doing anything different here. It's not a sin, but you have deprived yourself of your true identity and joy. And that's no way to treat a child of God, and you know it. Sundari, you have something to say?
Well, I was thinking of my new favorite acronym for fear, which is face everything and rise. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you can see how it's completely your responsibility. My previous favorite acronym was free energy awaiting release. But that face everything and arise and rise is just so simple and so true.
I like false evidence appearing real.
But then you don't really feel your responsibility in it. Well, in the appearance.
False evidence appearing real. To who? Judge, who judged it that way? Look at workbook page 385. Back of the book. There's only 3/8 of a book left. Flip it all the way to the right. Get to page 385, paragraph 10, right in the same neighborhood where we were a moment ago. We're looking for upgrades in our thinking. We're looking for returning our minds away from the substitute, away from false thinking to true thinking, in which we will find peace, and in peace, we will go back to creativity, we'll go back to sharing, we'll go back to ability to love, we'll go back to ability to create again. It all starts with peace, because we have believed in something that is essentially not peaceful, something that's dying, actually. Every breath you take is one less breath you have. Isn't that true? You only have so many breaths, right? Hey, have you been breathing this whole time during the meeting? Oh, you should have held your breath. You're dying quicker now. It's just, this is a sentence to death, living in a body. It's not a sin. It's just, you're just playing out a character on a stage. Shakespeare got it right. You know, our world is a stage and all of us are actors. But you're taking it so seriously, you think this is you. That's what we're trying to fix. You can awaken and connect, reconnect the part of your mind that knows eternity. This is what you do with vision. That's what we're doing with this whole thing. Look at paragraph 10. I think we're up to Deborah. Deborah, would you read for us? Paragraph 10 on workbook 385. This wonderful lesson 200, which is entitled, There is no peace except the peace of God.
Now is there silence. Seek no further. I've come to where the road is carpeted with leaves of false desires, fallen from the trees of hopelessness you sought before. Now are they underfoot, and you look up and on toward heaven with the body's eyes, but serving for an instant longer now. Peace is already recognized at last, and you can feel its soft embrace surround your heart and mind with comfort and with love.
Because peace has dawned on you. You have touched the truth. You've had a holy instant by now. When you recognize that there is no peace but the peace of God, and this is a peace that you would have, then you look at the false desires that you had before. These are the leaves that have fallen from the tree, and the tree is hopeless. Hopeless desires that never were going to work, that were never going to work, that were never going to work. This is a relief. And now you stand on top of those leaves. And you take an easy breath because you're no longer chasing dreams. This is what we're doing. Judgment is one of those things that we have to navigate and hand over to the Holy Spirit and get out of the hands of the ego. One more reference. Turn to page, in the text, page 445 in the text. Yeah. Just some Course in Miracles metaphysics to help us let go of this habit of judgment. It really is essentially part of your awakening, because as long as you rely on judgment as the arbiter of your happiness, that means you're going to have to manipulate the world and it's going to have to cooperate. Otherwise, you know, the judgments would take on a whole different flavor, and they put them back down the level of the world where they belong. And you will judge as a body. You will, but you take it out of something that is required for your happiness. And then you will loose it from being required for your survival. The ego thinks if you don't judge, you won't survive. It's kind of a subtle point, because you have to be navigating this going toward vision and not be and stay away from the greediness of the world and the body, where you'll judge to be comfortable. That's not what we're talking about. The body comfortable, not what we're talking about. You're way beyond that. Okay? This will help. Really clearly put. I mean, Jesus was really on. Ross, read for us the amazing paragraph 1 on page 445.
So it starts out, reason and perception. Projection makes perception. The world you see is what you give it, what you gave it. Nothing more than that. But though it is no more than that, it is not less. Therefore, to you, it is important. It is the witness to your state of mind, the outside picture of an inward condition. As a man thinketh, so does he perceive. Therefore, seek not to change the world, but choose to change your mind about the world. Perception is a result and not a cause. And that is why order of difficulty in miracles is meaningless. Everything looked upon with vision is healed and holy. Nothing perceived without it means anything. And when there is no meaning, there is chaos.
Boy, you just can't say it better than that. Jason, you want to read tonight? You there, Jason?
He did a chat message saying he wasn't feeling well.
Okay. We lost Andrew Huang the same way. Had a headache. I have that effect on people sometimes, I guess. Right. Julie, are you there? You want to read for us? I want to have you read paragraph one again so Ross can hear. You're reading this to Ross.
Projection makes perception. The world you see is what you gave it, nothing more than that. But though it is not more than that, it is not less. Therefore, to you, it is important. It is the witness to your state of mind, the outward picture of an inward condition. As a man thinketh, so does he perceive. Therefore, seek not to change the world, but choose to change your mind about the world. Perception is a result and not a cause. And that is why order of difficulty in miracles is meaningless. Everything looked upon with vision is healed and holy. Nothing perceived without it means anything. And where there is no meaning, there is chaos.
Oh, I just love that.
Mm-hmm.
So orienting, so clear. So many of our words are defined here. Just wonderful. You know, another place where he rocks us in pretty cold, stark terms is early in the workbook. Go to workbook 30, page 34, lesson 23. This is also a radical lesson that just goes right at the work that we're doing. He's like, you want to be happier? Would you like, hey, Bunky, would you like some less stress in your life? I got lesson 23 for you. Try it. You'll like it. Check it out. He says, I can escape from the world I see by giving up attack bots. Laying out the knife that you use to harm yourself on a day-by-day basis. Attack thoughts. You would need some judgment in order to know what to attack, I think, to really commit to the attack, to make the attack meaningful to your happiness. You probably have to judge it in a way that says, well, they deserve this attack of dressing down or swearing or even in your private mind to say that they're evil. This is an attack thought. Oh, but the, so look at paragraph two. So, Judy, you want to read that for us? Paragraph two?
Sure. It's the cause of the world.
You know what? Judy, would you read for us paragraph one and two? I just can't skip one because it's right there. It's so great. So I'll have you read one and two.
All right. The idea for today contains the only way out of fear that will ever succeed. Nothing else will work. Everything else is meaningless. But this way cannot fail. Every thought you have makes up some segment of the world you see. It is with your thoughts, then, that we must work. If your perception of the world is to be changed. If the cause of the world you see is attack thoughts, you must learn that it's these thoughts which you do not want. There is no point in lamenting the world. There's no point in trying to change the world. It is incapable of change because it is merely an effect, but there is indeed a point in changing your thoughts about the world. Here you are changing the cause. The effect will change automatically.
Here you are changing the cause. The effect will change automatically. Is what I'm trying to say, that if you're working the problem upside down, if you're trying to save the world, if you're trying to change the world to save you, I mean, save yourself by saving the world, it's upside down. You will struggle. You will struggle again and again. He says, there is no point in trying to change the world. The script is written for the world, for your body. This is why trying to have a holy ego, trying to have an ego that never has a wavering thought of peace ever, it's an uphill climb and it's unnecessary. It's kind of fun. I like to do it. I like to think I've conquered my ego really well. I have a pretty peaceful thinking in my head. I attack thoughts, fear thoughts. I mean, it's pretty cool. But this is not, this is the effect of the change. This is not the cause of the change. Do you see what he's saying here? There's no point in lamenting the world. There's no point in trying to change the world. It is incapable of change. The world is a place of murder, death, loss, with a chance to have a substitute for love. Let's work on that, says the ego, innocently. It's having a blast. But it's incapable of change. It is made to be a place of chaos. It's merely an effect, the world. You can see it differently. And get this now, the next sentence is so critical. Your whole world changes. Not because you change the world, because you change your mind about the world, and suddenly there is beauty. Suddenly there's opportunity to share. Suddenly there's opportunity for more joy. Suddenly there's a place that you can go with the world, in the world. And you can bring love. You can celebrate sharing. Not because you change the world. It'll say it. It's incapable of change because it's merely an effect. But there is indeed a point in changing your thoughts about the world. Ready? Sentence 6. Here you are changing the cause of the world. The effect will change automatically. You are the dreamer of the dream. So that's why we want to drop judgment as having teeth and affecting the dreamer of the dream. Let me say it again. Our purpose tonight is to catch judgment as having some teeth that can affect the dreamer of the dream. It affects the dream. It's how you dream. But don't let your judgments affect the dreamer of the dream. Now your effect, your tail, is chasing the dog. It's actually the dog who's running around trying to get the tail. It's right thinking versus wrong thinking. Okay. Well, there's so much we could do on that, but let's go back to our guidance on tonight's reading. So turn back to text page 443, and let's just jam. Oh, we only have 10 minutes. Okay, so we got to stick with what Jesus is trying to teach us. On paragraph 7, because it's rocking. Woo! Jump in paragraph 7. Jump to, sentence 2. But vision sets all things right, bringing them gently within the kindly sway of heaven's laws. Remember I told you a couple of times that heaven is like a code word in A Course in Miracles for knowledge? How peaceful is it to really know what you're doing? Very. You can navigate. You can have fun. This is what heaven is. Heaven is understanding and knowledge that comes from understanding. So, Jesus is saying, he's grabbing his beard and he's saying, look, take a second out. You've been so stressed, he says. You're having coffee with Jesus, and he says, you know what? Just take a minute and imagine, what if you recognize this world that you're so wrapped up in? You recognized just for a second that it's an hallucination made up in your head. What if you did recognize that it's made up in your head? Would that change anything? Would it change everything? Forever?
It's liberating.
It's liberating. Wow. You mean you are free? You're not a body? If the world's an hallucination, that means your body too, right? Your body's in the world. And yet you're here, you're enough to think about it. You're still here to think about it. So you're still here. Ooh. That's pretty serious stuff all of a sudden, huh?
But that thought enough. Yes, you're still here, but that thought enough. I do this, and it's instant freedom. So it's just being able to keep doing that that becomes the tricky thing.
Yeah, yeah, it does. As we remember to do it, and then we let Jesus take us on to the next lesson. You know, work us through the workbook. Now with that thought in mind, we begin to harness our mind, our creative mind. And our free thoughts become our new home. And our judgmental and limiting thoughts that brought depression, for example, it's one of many things they do, are weaker and weaker. The world does, like as we just read this back on in the workbook on lesson 23, it says these thoughts, once you drop them, the world changes and it takes care of itself. Of course, because the truth is true, it turns out. But you do, yes, Julie, you have to be vigilant with forgiveness and let go of the negative thinking. Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. What if you recognize this world as hallucination? What if you really understood that you made it up? What if you realized that those who seem to walk about in it, that would be like, you know, everybody, your ex, your next, the next ex, everybody. They would sin, and they would die, attack and murder and destroy themselves. All those people have already done that and will do it, and you'll be part of that. What if they're wholly unreal? Would that change anything?
Yeah.
Could you have faith in what you see if you accepted that they're all unreal? These are figments of your imagination? Let's do paragraph 8 real quick because it's so in line. Julie, Luann, would you read for us paragraph 8? How do you get rid of something you focused on your entire life as your life? How would you actually let it go? Because it's everything you think you are. Lay it on us, Luann.
Hallucinations disappear when they are recognized for what they are. This is the healing and the remedy. Believe them not, and they are gone. And all you need to do is recognize that you did this. Once you accept this simple fact and take it onto yourself, the power you gave them, you are released from them. One thing is sure, hallucinations serve a purpose, and when that purpose is no longer held, they disappear. Therefore, the question never is whether you want them, but always, do you want the purpose that they serve? This world seems to hold out many purposes, each different and with different values. Yet they are all the same. Again, there is no order, only a seeming hierarchy of values.
And just to indulge Jesus, read one more sentence from the next paragraph.
Only two purposes are possible, and one is sin, the other holiness.
Okay, so he dropped back down to his normal teaching level with that sentence.
So I was going to ask a question about what we read just very shortly before.
Sure.
Instead of letting go of the idea that perceiving that we're having hallucinations, would it be just as easy or just as right to say, all I'm going to do is look at someone and realize that what they really are is love, just like I am, and therefore I'm just going to act as if that's what I'm responding to, is the love they are, rather than anything else they do?
This is what you would do when vision wakes up. It would happen naturally. It wouldn't be an effort. But if you say, I'm going to ignore how much they hurt me, and I'm just going to pretend that they're love, it's not going to work.
But if your intention is to love, it's almost like when I know that I'm looking at somebody, no matter what they're doing, my intention and their intention, they are love and I am love.
Yes.
I don't have to think about anything else and what they're doing in terms of judging or not judging.
Yes. When you can reinterpret their actions and what they said and their very existence, when you can reinterpret that to its cause, see, they're in effect.
Yes.
When you take it back to their cause, as you've described, you see, oh, it was actually an effort to love, a call for love, or actually love, and I couldn't see it because they took something from me. We had a Course in Miracles member. She had her car at Trader Joe's, and the window was broken, and her purse was gone. And that was, day or two, she comes into our Course in Miracles meeting, and she had to reconcile. A person just disregarded her life in every way, stole her purse, just took it from her. She was trying not to judge that person as bad. It's going to take a lot of effort for her to get everything back in her life in order. Everything was in her purse. What we did is we simply put her in the shoes of the person who needed to break into some stranger's car and get into that purse to get that money to be peaceful for an hour, to get on the bus and go home to his children or her children, or get the drugs that they need, because, man, the withdrawals are too tough. I can't live. I can't do it. I need another fix, or whatever it was. And we spent a while getting in this person's head, and before you knew it, she was feeling compassion, and that was my goal. And you start to understand, the whole perspective changes when you go to cause. And everybody has the same desire, everybody, every living thing, same desire. It's happiness, it's peace, it's joy. In this twisted world, we found a whole bunch of wrong ways to go about it. Only wrong because they don't work.
How about only wrong because we're thinking wrong about it? That work?
Yeah, well, this actually is a horror movie. In Hollywood, they make horror movies to be horrible. They actually try to film the chainsaw going through the head and then film the head rolling down the carpet, leaving a blood stain every 18 inches or so, depends on the size of the head. That's on purpose. That's on purpose. You've done this with you're living in a world. Maybe not. You've done that too, right? You make horror movies part of your mind. This is part of what you're doing, Ross.
I'm trying. I almost have it, but I'm trying to put in perspective how COVID is a hallucination that serves a purpose, and how when that purpose is no longer held, it disappears.
Nice. Yes.
So maybe you can clarify.
You ever heard of a speed up? People talk about the celestial speed up is happening.
Gary Renard, yeah. Gary Renard's book.
Gary Renard talked about that.
It gets more and more intense.
It gets more intense. Yeah. I'll ask Gary to point that out. that Helen and Bill recognized that. They thought that was part of what A Course in Miracles came in. They thought, why now? We can barely understand it. Who else can understand it? And they got the message. Well, it's in the Urtext. Things are speeding up right now compared to how it was. And all sorts of technologies and thinking people are able to speed it up too, you know? So COVID is just another challenge. Look what it's doing. It's getting us, Ross, you and I wouldn't even be speaking if it wasn't for COVID. And you touched me deeply in your awakening and your teaching. You've taught all of us. And I'm really grateful for that. Not grateful for the COVID otherwise, but I like that part of it. It does have a purpose. It has reached every corner of the world, rich and poor.
Right.
And it has pulled us all into the same bracket of humanity. Yes, Sundari.
Well, it's interesting thinking of the metaphor, because the body is being programmed with the way people are feeling. And so what COVID is saying is, I can't breathe. There's something around me in society, and I literally can't breathe from what's going on right now. And that's what's manifesting globally. And if you think about it, I think of weather patterns as representing areas of people and their emotions and programming going out. You know, the instability, the tornadoes whirling around, the earthquakes, the sharp differentials. But COVID is like, I can't breathe.
The bottom line, and we run out of time, so I just want to take a few sentences and give you a bottom line here before we go on to it, because our teaching is going to go in a slightly different direction after this paragraph. So I just want you to look at what he says in paragraph 8. He says, if you're willing to recognize that you're not a body and you are free, and that you've been dreaming up a place of struggle with some periods of happiness, only to be dashed and eventually your body dies out. This hallucination, we're talking the world, right? You're with me. It disappears when recognized for what it is. But you know what? You who are using your body's eyes and you have to put on the right prescription glasses to read the page are so deep in the dream, you would need a miracle to think this is not real. Honestly, that's what you're calling for. How do you do that? How do you call for a miracle? You go silent. You realize that you need it. You realize you can't do it. You are the problem. You are the reason you need a miracle. Go silent. When we turn off the Zoom call, take a few minutes and just look and see, what if this is actually a hallucination? Try to touch that thought. Try to touch that thought and say, I need a shift in perception about everything I think is real. And go silent just for a minute. That's all it takes. Really helpful. When you do that, that's the healing and the remedy, period. Short sentence, big meaning. End of teaching. Believe these hallucinations not. That's the use of the mind. That's using the mind with the one power that there is. The same power that made the world gives up the world. Is that fair? Of course. It's good math. And all you need to do is recognize that you did this. This is not done to you. Let that thought enter your mind in your silence. This is not done to you. Kind of a break. It's kind of restful to recognize I'm not being chased by some power greater than me. I actually did this. Ooh. Let that hallucination start to take hold. Once you accept the simple fact and take unto yourself, there's the word power, that you gave the hallucinations, you are released from the hallucinations. And it says it basically again, two or three more times. That's your job when we stop the Zoom call. Take a moment, get simple, get quiet. Allow your mind to shift. Take that miracle. It's being offered you right now. You're not a body. You are free. You actually remain as God created you. Touch that. Thank you, thank you. Amen.
Thank you, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. Thanks for digging in. We really went on, we hit some good spots tonight.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody. Do that meditation. Get silent. Call on the Holy Spirit. Good to see you, Julie. Good night, everybody.